Hi, I'm Alex Beam. I'm a columnist in the Globe's Living Arts section. I write my columns specifically to generate hate mail, and now I'm here to share some of that mail with you.
I'm writing this letter.
This is an audio presentation from the Boston Globe.
Now, these first letters all relate to a column I wrote on Wednesday, November 30th, 2006. I recently wrote one of my Mr. Fussy columns, which is where I adopt the alter ego of a character named Mr. Fussy, who actually comes out of a children's book series, and he makes these kind of uptight observations on life, and it's extremely rare that these light and frivolous columns would generate an email with the subject heading, "Cancel my subscription," but that's exactly what happened. Recently, a police officer named Philip Tanzi took offense at the notion that Mr. Fussy had written that police officers might have a penchant for eating donuts. Now, his email reads, "Sir, as a police officer, I took offense at your crack about Dunkin' Donuts. In general, it seems you and your cohorts at the Globe have a dislike for police. Most all of your papers, stories, and editorials are demeaning to my profession." I actually just sent this guy an email about 10 days after receiving his canceled subscription notice with a link to a front page story we had today about a heroic Boston policeman who went to Iraq. We put him and his heroic story on page one, so I'm hoping maybe Philip Tanzi will reconsider his rash decision to cancel his subscription. Another reader named Howard Beardsley noticed my kind of slanging the cops hanging out at Dunkin' Donuts, but he felt that I went too easy on another group of people Mr. Fussy had alluded to in the piece. Beardsley writes me, "Good observations this morning, but you ducked after mentioning the shadowy gnomes in Switzerland. Don't tell me you're willing to take on the cops who hang out at Dunkin' Donuts, but are afraid of the three Swiss readers of your column. The Swiss are neutral and thus have no standing army, so you're safe." Well, Howie, I take umbrage at the notion that I have only three Swiss readers of my column. I probably have as many as six, seven, possibly eight Swiss readers, and that column indeed was reprinted in the International Herald Tribune, which, as you probably know, has 6,500 Swiss readers, so take that. Continuing with Mr. Fussy, Mr. Fussy had actually found a reference to a refrigerator that's not the refrigerator of the future, it's the refrigerator of today. It's a refrigerator that takes a digital photograph of its own contents, and when something goes missing, it sends a message to your cell phone saying, rutabaga missing, please replace, something like that. However, I did casually mention that I keep marshmallow fluff in the refrigerator, which Harry Jenock, of course, and actually a couple of other readers, immediately called me out on, because this is a very complicated question. I would never write something that's not truthful. In fact, I do keep my marshmallow fluff in the fridge. However, it should not be kept in the fridge. The readers are exactly correct. Marshmallow fluff is not to be kept in the refrigerator. It has almost a stony consistency when it becomes cold. And the real purpose, of course, is to have a gentle spreading capability with peanut butter, naturally, on whole wheat or rye bread. So I stand corrected. I'm almost amazed that the editor of the Globe didn't demand that I write a correction on page two. But nonetheless, I apologize to the readers. And yet, I haven't taken my fluff out of the refrigerator. The next batch of letters relates to a column that was published on Wednesday, December 6th, 2006. It had a headline something like, "Pity the Poor Rich." It was playing off some absurd articles that appeared in the New York Times and elsewhere that were making what I guess to these journalists was a very important distinction between the really rich and then the really super rich. Of course, a distinction that's lost on literally, according to their own statistics, lost on 99.8% of the American population. I did invoke in this column the name of Lou Dobbs because there had been a lot of journalism lately, both in The New Yorker and in a new magazine called The American, attacking Lou Dobbs. Lou Dobbs has sort of become the Wendell Willkie for the serious center-left, and because Dobbs positions himself as a raving economic populist. A man named George Rabone from Swampscott actually made my day by sending me two-thirds of what I would call the perfect columnist trifecta. he hated both what I wrote and what Jeff Jacoby, our conservative columnist on the op-ed page, wrote. So he sent us both essentially the same email, trashing us both, albeit with two separate comments. To me, he says, "Alex, by any standard, Lou Dobbs is a blowhard. I do not believe he actually believes anything he spouts. He's just a hobby horse for his imagined importance." Now, in this same column about the extremely wealthy and their extremely important problems, I alluded to something that's called the Cost of Living Extremely Well Index, which I guess is probably pronounced CLEWI or something like that. It's published every year by Forbes magazine. It's almost a complicated satire of itself. And among other things, there was the cost of a year at Groton, the exclusive boarding school just north of where I'm speaking. And a loyal reader of mine named John Owens took off at some length on my allusion to Groton. Not my first allusion to Groton, I might say, but John wrote to me, "Alex, don't knock Groton. It gave us FDR and a whole line of New Deal revolutionaries. Even Dean Acheson went there and finished last in his class before stumbling into some right Cold War strategies later in life. He had the good sense to make a buddy of W. Averill Harriman, who made the ultimate grand gesture by arriving at New Haven in his own private Union Pacific railroad car." Thank you so much for your cards and letters, and I hope you'll keep them coming. This is Alex Beam from the Boston Globe. I know it will hurt you.